Blog Talk Radio.
Let's get lost in a better place. Pick up a bird, travel through time and space. So much to learn, so much to see. A chance to escape reality. Open your mind and your heart. Fresh new start. MJ Network will bring you there. So let's talk about it when live and on the air.
Good morning, everyone. This is MJ Network, MJ in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce. And I have to tell you, I'm calling you from freezing New York City. It's 17 degrees here, but this show is going to be fantastic. Told in direct and simple language with events that are easily understood, you wonder, what's happening to the human race? What's next? What will the final mission be, and will they remain forever along the Guardian as we talk about the book Shepherds of Destiny with Kiel Bornkoff? Good morning. How are you? And I am so delighted that you are here. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you for having me, Fran.
Oh, I'm so excited that your book was just wound up on my doorstep, seriously. And this is an interesting plot and scary in a sense. How did you create the plot and why? This is too bad you can't really cure ALS. And what research did you make in order to focus on the storyline? Because this is a serious illness that everybody would love to have cured.
Sure, yeah. Actually, I had a colleague of mine at one point that was actually a pilot for a major airline who came down with ALS. And that watching him deteriorate and ultimately pass away was a very emotional time for me. And that's why I use that disease, because it is a disease purely of the body. The patient's mind is fully intact up until the very end. They know exactly what's happening to them. They don't lose any cognitive ability normally, and so that to me was one of the most devastating diseases I think that we have to endure. And I'm also a big fan of history. Civil War particularly interested me, so that was the first place I went. I did a number of tours of Gettysburg, the battlefields up there, did a lot of research into what would happen, and found that a number of historians believe that had Stonewall Jackson survived his wounds and returned to the battle with Robert E. Lee, that the outcome of the war could have been quite different. So that kind of gave me the plot and the initial, if you will, the initial storyline. And then following that, I went to look at World War II, and another particularly interesting area of mine, and did some research into everything that Winston Churchill did as far as keeping Britain involved in the war. I mean, he basically turned down every one of his war cabinet. At one point, the king was very questionable of him. And he basically stood his ground and refused to negotiate with Hitler on a surrender. And because of that is the reason the Allies won the war, I think, a big reason.
Well, the World War II stands close to my whatever. My grandmother was in a camp. So when I read
that
in World War II, she was in, it was really weird, a Polish sterilization camp. And I found out about it right before she died. She told me the whole story. That's one of the stories in my last book, and it's really mind-boggling to know that she survived it all and can remember it. But you created something, well, maybe there is something called cyborgs or cyborg brains. How do you download, this is so cool, a human mind into cyborg or an electronic brain and yet keep the same person's personality, or even better?
Right. Okay.
It's like, yeah, I wish
somebody
could do that sometimes.
Yeah, the most well-known cyborgs out there are seen in the Terminator movies and Star Trek TNG series with the Borg. And cyborgs are usually part human, at least in the fictional side, part human flesh and part technology, or part mechanical. And in Shepard's, the unusual twist there is that the human mind from a patient whose body is diseased beyond repair is downloaded into the cyborg electronic brain and actually becomes the control of that. The cyborg at that point actually becomes the person who had been ill. Their personality is intact, all their thoughts and memories are intact, and it is a complete scan. Now, talk about scanning the brain. One of the things, or several things, are going on even now. You may have heard that certain limbs, artificial limbs, can be controlled with thought directly from the mind, the brain. You know, so that we're already starting to see some of that scanning of the brain being done to affect medical improvements in people. So this just takes that a step further. And in my research, looking at one of my, I guess, idols out there in the science world is Ray Kurzweil, the futurist. And he had spoke to that in several of his books as far as being able to download our mind to a computer or to a cyborg or some artificial vehicle that would eventually be able to provide as much as immortality to people.
That would be fantastic. It's just too bad, like I said before, that you couldn't do it with Alzheimer's because the brain is the most affected part of it. But
right,
you never know.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, and there's so much research, and it's never going to happen. So it's 2040. Do you foresee this happening in the future? Could this really happen? That would be fascinating if anybody's alive
by
then.
Sure. Given the progress of medical science, say over the last 50 years even, things going on today that were science fiction 50 years ago, I certainly think something like this could be on the forefront by then. And there's another twist coming in book two, as to how this technology for the series books was accelerated. I'm not going to go into details. You have to read book two. But but there's a very large section of what brought this on and how Ansley, Christian's wife, got involved in the development of the cyborg.
That is interesting. Yeah, I know. She had a lot to do with it. But the point, other thing is that Christian Barnett is dead, but he's so wealthy. So how did the fact that he has so much money, you know, work in his favor that he was able to do this? Because most people couldn't afford it, I don't think.
Well, part of it is, of course, I think we all know today that the very wealthy have access to medical services and what have you much more easily and greater than us mere mortals do. And they can go around the world to whatever advanced technology they can find. So he does have the money behind him, but he also has the funding that was provided by the U.S. government to develop the cyborg. So it's not just Christian's money doing it, it's the U.S. government doing it. And actually, book two gets more into the details of how that money was acquired or approved by the federal government to do this. So it's a combination of resources, I guess.
I guess he was really lucky because us regular people have to pay it away, like I know. So what did he do before he became ill? What did Christian do? He was a very powerful man. So he just has to speak, and the world stops. I know, but it's fun to be like that.
Well, a little bit of history with Christian. He is the son of a billionaire who was CEO of Barnett Industries. And Barnett Industries provides futuristic global transportation systems, things like driverless vehicles and maglev trains and these types of things globally. So it's a huge conglomerate that when Christian's father was killed and his parents were killed in a plane crash, Christian stepped in and took over the company at that point. So from that point, he was basically, that's where he was in charge of all of this for several years before he fell ill.
I know, this is so scary. And Sherry says hi. She's listening.
Oh, okay.
I'm telling you. So who is Dr. Savannah Richards, and what's her role, and how did she create this means? I was, fascinated to preserve a human brain in a body that was destroyed. That is so cool.
Yeah, it's the biggest challenge with doing something like that as far as preserving the human brain is being able to identify all of the connections, if you will, to the rest of the body, the synapses and the nerves and nerve endings and things like that, which probably number in the hundreds of thousands. And being able to identify those was the key to do it. And, of course, we couldn't do that, or anybody couldn't do that, until we got AI advanced enough, artificial intelligence advanced enough to be able to assist with that. So once that was done, the rest of it kind of fell into place for Savannah. Savannah, before she worked for Christian, was in the Stanford University neurological recovery area, and that's where she developed her, not a cure for Alzheimer's, but it was able to stop its advance. So if it was caught early, its impact would be minimized on a patient. So that's where she got her famous. She was the one that worked with Stanford when they diagnosed Christian's ALS. And it turns out that Savannah and Christian's wife, Angelie, knew each other at Stanford when they were there. So that's how basically it came in. Christian immediately liked what she was doing and recruited her to come to his new center for neurological restoration that he built on his mansion's property.
I really wish that she was around when my mother had it and she could have helped to slow it down. She found out in 2002. She realized it herself. And in 2003, she looked at me and she said, "There's something not right." We had a long discussion or whatever. It was took until like 2008 where I realized she lost it. And yet there were times that she was hysterically funny. So, yeah, I could have used her help. So what role does Ainsley play in this scientific development? And tell us about DARPA, because without that, that wouldn't have happened.
Right. Okay. So, of course, Ainsley was always a gifted child, I guess. She went to school, went to Stanford at the age of 16, graduated at the age of 18, completed her medical degree and internship by the age of 22, and was immediately recruited by DARPA. DARPA, the Defense Agency, let me see, I've got the acronym, Defense Agency Research Projects Agency, is what DARPA stands for. And they are the ones behind all the advanced top-secret development for the U.S. military. You know, things that came out of there are like the lasers, like you see on Star Trek or Star Wars, the drones that came up through DARPA, the design for the B-2 bomber came out of DARPA, and there's a lot of things we don't know about because they're all top-secret projects that come out of there for the U.S. military.
This is so interesting. Now, this is the part that really got me, like, oh, my God. Okay, they get the brains, whatever, and then you created the Guardian. Why did you specifically create this person? That was, like, mind-boggling. I mean, I've read, I can't tell you, Kiel, thousands of books. Seriously?
Mm-hmm.
My mother's fault. I've been reading since I'm two. Seriously. And, no, I've been reading, I read, like, 10 books a week. And they read five at a time. And I'm saying, this is so original. How did you create the Guardian, and why did you pick the specific time periods? So the characters went back in time, but basically it was in their mind. And what kind of a role did the Guardian have on the impact of his life? I mean, I would have gotten scared to death. Like, who is this person that's talking to me?
Right.
Well, I'm not really there. How did you create that, and why? And I hope you're bringing them back, please.
Yeah, I created the Guardian because I needed a means of incorporating the supernatural element for the story.
Yeah.
After considering several options, including an angel or a spirit, the Guardian seemed like the best option because he could assume any physical appearance that was safe for humans and easily explain the time travel element needed for the story, because he can basically step out of time and go to any time period in human time. So, and, of course, when he first appeared to Christian was pretty startled. He thought that maybe the transplant of his brain into stasis failed or messed up somehow. And that was his first reaction to it. But ultimately, the Guardian guided him and explained you know, I explain in detail in the book what the Guardian is, how he's, you know, impacting everything, and how he's there to guard over timelines, many timelines. And when one goes astray, he needs to react to it. So he uses the spirit, if you will, from Christian, and he takes him back to the Civil War and uses him to change an outcome that went awry over General Jackson, where General Jackson, instead of, we all know that General Jackson succumbed to his wounds, but in this case, the timeline got altered where he didn't succumb, and he actually returned to battle and to the war with General Lee, and they were able to ultimately win the Civil War. The South won the Civil War, and that changed the entire timeline from then on through World War II, ultimately seeing the destruction of the United States at the hands of Hitler and Japan in World War II.
That would have been scary. So if he failed, and history failed, that would have been really tragic, even worse. So we can't tell anybody what happened. Yeah. So now we have another character that wanted to meet him too. Tell us about Aaron Adams, and how did you create the second character with ALS, and then both of them sort of connected together. Why did you connect the second one? And I hope you're going to bring this one back too, because this is too interesting.
Oh yeah, he's definitely in book two. Yeah, no, Aaron. Basically, what Ansley was doing with DARPA, they were testing the download of a mind, a chimpanzee mind, to its cyborg chimpanzee. And initially, the download would go okay, but after a day or two, the chimp would just go insane. And it was felt by Ansley and her colleagues that perhaps the chimp didn't have the cognitive ability to understand what was happening to it, and that's what was causing it to react in the way it did. So Ansley decided, let's see if we can get a candidate, a human candidate, to try this download on. And that's where Aaron came in. Aaron also suffered from advanced ALS, and he was ready to take his own life at the point that Ansley and Savannah got hold of him.
I remember.
And said, you know, as an option, would you try this? And he was like, absolutely, I'll try this. I'll try anything. So that's how Aaron was ultimately created. So what Aaron did, again, it provided another cyborg, provided another spirit, if you will, for the Guardian to work with on correcting timelines. And initially, Ansley was very resistant. And you know, if you read book one, you'll find out why. But Ansley was very resistant to Aaron partnering with Christian. But Aaron finally forced himself onto Christian, who Christian initially was very affronted by Aaron's approach, but ultimately his curiosity about another cyborg overcame his resistance, and the two got together and hit it off. And they are definitely, in book two, they are partnering and working together on some of the projects there.
I know, that's exciting, I'll tell you that. So you created technology. Now, you did something with smartphones, and then when I got my new smartphone right after I read your book, I go like, I don't know if I want to do this. I don't know if I'm going to have a smartphone anymore. I was like, oh, my God. So the creator of the smartphone, what does this person hope that billionaire with elites and ruling their government puppets, like he was trying to take over their minds with the smartphone? Exactly how does that play into it? Because that was really scary. Like, oh, my God.
Yeah, governments, in my research, particularly with book two, there are a number of governments out there now that have and probably still are experimenting with various means of mind control. And one of the areas that is being explored is using certain frequencies that can be generated from a smartphone for the purposes of mind control. And so I just took that into the kind of the science fiction, using that as a basis of it. And the smartphone receives a signal that is transmitted unknowingly to a subject, and actually can change what they see, can change how they think, can change how they would vote in an election, for example. And that's what the Guardian takes both Aaron and Christian forward in time and shows them this what's going on. So when Aaron and Christian come back, and in book two, they decide, well, let's see, we may not need to enter the mind of this subject. We may be able to use more conventional means to head off this disaster. So that's what they're working on again in book two.
I can't wait to read this. Oh, my God. Actually, it was funny because when I checked out, you know, because I wanted to put the review back on my Facebook wall or whatever, there was a thing that said the Shepherds of Destiny book 2. I don't know. Maybe somebody's copying the title. We have to get them. But there was something on
that. I don't know. I haven't. Yeah. It's tentatively called book 2, but I'm looking. I'll probably look at a subtitle of some kind.
I would think so.
When I get closer to it. Yeah. Maybe
so
include
we have
the book
Aaron.
2 in the subtitle, but.
I always wanted to be a character in a crazy book that's different, and I was somebody made me a reviewer that was mean and terrible, and killed people, and I said that was great, but not quite evil enough. Sorry. So, what happens when his brain is downloaded? He's finally awake, and he notices different changes in himself. Are the positive changes? Is he glad, or does his wife think that he's better?
Well, in Christian's case, he had been in stasis for several years. So when his mind was downloaded into the cyborg, his mind really didn't know what to do with it at first.
Mm.
He couldn't even blink his eyes when it first happened. He could see, but that's all, and he could hear, but that's all he could do. And he was very concerned for several days that he could do nothing, and then finally he was able to blink. And he caught Ansley was with him almost continuously for a couple of days while he was in this state, and she saw him blink. And then from there on, he was able to finally learn how to use this new body. And it took him several weeks to get it to where he could actually, you know, do anything constructive with his new body, and then eventually it all came together. But in contrast to Christian, Aaron's mind was scanned and immediately downloaded, and he knew what he was getting. So when he downloaded, he immediately responded positively to everything. And, of course, this new cyborg body can be tuned. And when it, you know, at its highest level, it can be pretty much what, I don't know if you remember the TV series $6 Million Man.
Oh,
but
yeah, I love that.
He can be, and he essentially had those kinds of powers. But they tune him down so he doesn't exhibit those kinds of powers in public. So right now he's basically got a governor, both of them, both Christian and Aaron, have a governor that controls how much, I guess, physical power that they can exert.
Well, the Guardian, they're the only ones that know about it, right? Ainsley and they don't know about it.
Yeah, very top secret. Right, just a few people at DARPA, Ainsley, Savannah, and Christian. You know, very close
to the group
that knows anything about it. Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about human domination as part of the plot. How does your plot relate to real-life events and elections today? Wouldn't it be nice if you could control this one and make it come out the right way?
If you wanted to, yeah.
Seriously. I think about that every time I listen to the candidates. I go, like, help.
And essentially, as far as elections, you may have seen recently over the last year or two, there's been articles coming out showing the influence, potential influence that social media has had on the outcome of elections. And so that's kind of an early stage of corporations trying to influence the outcome of an election. So far hadn't been, I don't think, a whole lot successful, but if you take that 20 years into the future, what are they going to be doing? So that was my basis for using the cellular technology for mind control in controlling the outcome of the 2056 election, which they deployed and got the candidate in place that they wanted, who was the government puppet to the billionaire elites.
It's scary. I mean, I do panel shows a lot. You never know what I'm going to do. And Monday I'm doing one on with Vincent Zandri, believe it or not, Lee Matthew Goldberg. We're talking about thriller writers that talk about thriller writers. But after reading a whole bunch of books, like I said, there was one that was dealing with, as a matter of fact, there's James Rapando's book that's coming out next month. It's called The Big Lie. Those are the Electoral College versus the popular vote. And it's how the Electoral College manipulates how they want the presidential vote win to go. And it's an interesting topic because, I mean, if people vote for this particular person, then why should the Electoral College of people, because they have a certain amount of votes each state, be allowed to decide that the popular vote doesn't count. So that's one of my controversial issues for next, hoping to come up with.
Yeah.
So I think that's interesting. Yeah, I've done a couple. You never know what's going to come out of me. So what happens when Aaron meets the Guardian? How does he feel
pretty
about
much
him?
Yeah, he's pretty much the same, a very similar reaction to what Christian had at first, because that there was no, they knew nothing of the Guardian when they went through this download procedure to a cyborg. This was totally unexpected on both Christian's part and on Aaron's part. And fortunately, both of them listened to the Guardian. And I think both of them, the fact that, especially Aaron, who knew exactly what he was doing when he was downloaded to a cyborg body, was adventurous enough to say, okay, Guardian, show me. Show me what you can do.
Yeah,
show
I
me
would.
What I need to do. And adapted very well. And Christian also, I mean, once he understood what the Guardian was trying to do, and of course, the Guardian had Christian, he spent much more time with Christian than he needed to with Aaron to get Christian to come around to what he needed him to do in regards to the Civil War and General Jackson. So it was challenging for both.
It must have been exciting to meet somebody like Jackson. That would have been cool. To me, I wonder what would have happened.
Amazing.
Yeah, it wouldn't have been happened if they could have stopped Pearl Harbor, if they could stop Hiroshima, if they could have stopped just about anything that happened. I wonder what would have happened if they could have stopped 9/11. That would have been
One of the most interesting books I've read over the last several years was Stephen King's. I think it's 11/22/63 is the name of it, but.
Yeah.
It's where his character goes back in time and prevents the assassination of JFK. And when he returns to his time in the future, everything has changed because JFK lived. And in fact, the USA is presented as a communist, puppet, if you will. And everything about the USA that he knew in the future is gone. Property is gone. I mean, the towns it's a mess. So he actually goes back again and replays the scenario, and JFK is actually assassinated. I thought that was a fascinating.
That is fascinating, and that is scary. And then too bad we can't go back in time and just make the people from. I lost a student in 9/11 and didn't realize it until a month later. And when somebody came in from the family and said so-and-so died in 9/11, I had just seen her 2 days before she brought her nephews to school, I was crushed. So, and they never found her. They never found her.
Oh, wow.
So nobody really knows.
My God.
Yeah, a lot of people weren't found. So,
wow.
When they are awake, do they remember what happened to them?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely, because...
And how do they feel about that?
They believe it because they're existing in the timeline that they helped preserve. So they know that they did the right thing when they went back and did what they did. Even though in one case it actually resulted in the death of General Jackson. So they do understand and they do see the need. And I think they feel pretty special about it too, that they have an opportunity to affect the outcome of human history like they did.
That's so cool, though. So tell us about his home, because I want one just like it.
Yeah, he's got a pretty extravagant home. I used, I did some research on several mansions in California to come up with a design for Christian's home. And he's got everything you could imagine. He's got, a helicopter pad. He's got a zero pool or something like that, where there's, it runs over the side of the wall. And it's just, dining rooms, movie theaters, bowling alleys. It's got everything you could ever imagine in a home. And then when he becomes a cyborg, they make some adjustments in the home. For example, his shower is no longer just a shower with water in it. It's actually a spray experience that has chemicals that rejuvenate the cyborg body. So things like that. I mean, he's got anything you could imagine in that house. Security.
Does he have a shopping mall?
No, I don't think so. I didn't put a shopping mall in there.
You didn't put a restaurant in it. What can I say? Oh, well.
No,
he's
I didn't put a restaurant.
I'm sure he has chauffeured limousines and stuff like that. He doesn't have to drive, right? That'd be so cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had normally, weather permitting, they always dine on the pool deck. And that, of course,
nice.
Is overlooking the mountains in California. They can see the sunsets. They can see the, you know, enjoy the outdoor air, the wonderful climate out there. And, of course, they have servants. He has a head chef, and he has servants mm-hmm. that serve them. And they entertain on the pool deck, and it's really in a kind of an outdoor place most of the year that they use.
But he doesn't need security, right? It's safe.
Oh, yeah.
He hasn't had anybody that tried to do anything to invade or anything like that. So,
right. In fact, this is the scene where the scene where Aaron finally gets to Christian. The first thing they do is call security, and security comes in, shows up immediately to drag Aaron off. But then they stop it. They stop security and actually set up a meeting. So
he's a brave soul. So, who else is involved, and what happens when it looks? This got me upset. I said, like, how could you stop the funding for a program like that because they didn't have anybody else? So, what did they want to stop the program, and what happens when they do? How do they find somebody else to help?
Okay, well, actually, no, the funding wasn't stopped. It was threatened to stop by the Secretary of Defense.
Threatened to stop, right, yeah.
Right, and he threatened to stop it because they had not seen a military cyborg, come out of the program. The problem being is that the military hadn't provided any candidates for the program.
Yeah.
And so once they did provide a candidate, within 12 months, they had a cyborg, a military officer who was a cyborg. And that was Eric. I don't know if you remember Eric.
Eric Richards, I got it.
Eric Richards, and he is Savannah's brother. He was captain of the ship that returned from Mars and had an accident on its way into orbit with some orbit debris and actually lost four members of his crew. And he was severely injured, almost didn't survive at all. And he became the candidate for the third cyborg.
So that is good because they need a lot more. I'd like to see them work as a team, like a
mm-hmm.
army team.
Yeah, that's where I'm going. that's where I'm going
Not
on a very special assignment.
Not bad for somebody that knows. See, this is what happens when you read too much. What can I tell you? Before I forget, I don't want to forget, Wednesday, this is a very controversial book. It's got to be.
Mm-hmm.
It's called The Chosen One by Walt Craig. It's very, very controversial. I can't wait to talk to him because, to be very honest, it's about a jihadist, guy that becomes a Mahdi, and he grew up not wanting to be it, and it's the Americans versus the Islamists, and the only reason why he becomes this dangerous man is because his family and the world and his people where he lives said that he's a genius and he should do this, and as a result, the Americans make one big mistake, and that's all I'll say because there's going to be a sequel, they tell me. It's scary.
Oh, wow.
So that's Wednesday.
Yeah, that
yeah. It's scary, scary. On the 27th,
mm-hmm.
none other than one of my very closest, I love this man, New York Times author Vincent Zandri and Lee Matthew Goldberg are going to be talking about thriller writers that write about thriller writers and whatever else comes to their minds. I have no idea, which is fine. On February 4th, someone that writes the most phenomenal books, but this is a new psychological thriller, Thief River Falls, mm-hmm. Brian Freeman. On the 19th, The Neighborhood, and on the 24th, another one of my favorite people, R.G. Belsky, is going to talk about Silent Victim, and it's a new character, and that's all I'll say about that. And on the 27th, I am so sorry, I've had to cancel this show 5 times because of my husband's surgery. Authors, we're going to talk about the Montague murders, and I'm doing it. Too bad. That's it. I have spoken. what can I say? So describe the Barnett Center and who is Major Barry? And how did he come into play with Eric Richards?
Okay, Major John Decatur Berry was a Confederate officer, and he was the one that gave the command for his unit to fire on Stonewall Jackson's group, who was returning from the front line. He thought that they were a Yankee brigade because they were coming from the Yankee side of the battlefield, and he was the one that actually gave the command to fire on Jackson's group. Jackson took a couple of wounds and was transported to a field hospital where they amputated his arm. But apparently they think he may have gotten infected with pneumonia from the surgery and from the wounds and ultimately succumbed to it. Of course, back then they had nothing like antibiotics or anything like that they could do.
So how did he possess his mind? Christian was told by the Guardian he had to possess his mind. Why?
Well, yes, because in the timeline that went awry, Berry hesitated giving the command to fire. And because he hesitated, Jackson was only wounded and was able to recover from his wounds. And that's what changed the timeline and allowed the South to win the Civil War. So what Christian did, Christian had the ability to actually take control of Berry's mind and give the command as it needed to be given, which was immediately upon seeing the Jackson Brigade coming back from the front. And that resulted in Jackson's death and returned the timeline to its known outcome.
That was scary, let me tell you. So let's talk about the election, though. How did the people dealing with the smartphones control the meeting that happened there that time? They said, "What?" And Shane, this is 2056. How did during the election? But what? How did they take charge of what happened? That's like, wouldn't you be able to like to do that? That is so interesting. And why?
Well, what they potentially were able to do, and of course this is all in the future, so it doesn't necessarily have to happen the way it was presented. But what the smartphone does is it's basically the vehicle, if you will, for a command to be given to a subject to vote in a certain way, to see certain things that weren't there, to make decisions that were wrong. Whatever the control unit, control person wanted them to do, they could get the subject to do by using the technology in the smartphone to relay it to their mind and be able to do it. So if they wanted to vote for a certain candidate, they just tell them to go vote for so-and-so. Yeah.
So how did you create world domination through technology? That's like, oh my God! I'm reading so many books about technology, and there's one where the world goes dark, and they're even able to control pacemakers and heart monitors and kill people from afar. It's like scary. So how would that create world domination, and how would you stop that? Well, can't you stop it?
Well, if it gets too far, you can't stop it. I mean, because basically the people that control the minds of the masses, there's no way to counter it. So that's why it has to be stopped before it gets deployed. And that's what Book 2 and maybe Book 3 will work with. But basically what they do is they, through this technology, have people vote for a candidate who is their puppet for president of not only the U.S., but rulers of other nations. So they establish their governmental puppets, the billionaire elites establish their government puppets in each major government. And that allows things like laws to be passed, rules, regulations to take effect. That does nothing but reduce the freedom of the masses to the benefit of the billionaire elites.
That's scary. So what would have happened? I'm going to add this. I'm just thinking out loud for a change. What would have happened if Christian wasn't rich and he didn't have the money to do all this? What would have happened to him then?
He probably would have passed away with ALS.
That's
like
scary.
a normal person would, yeah.
That is scary. So tell us more about Winston Churchill in World War II and how he came into play. I have your talking points in the back in front of me.
Sure. Yeah, exactly. well, Winston Churchill was named prime minister, and it was somewhat concerning to certain other parties, and including the king at the time was also very concerned about it. And but after meeting with Churchill and seeing what Churchill was doing, the king became more and more of a fan, to the point at one point he was actually considering supporting Churchill and resisting peace or surrender talks with Hitler. And that's what I used with the king and Aaron when the king went to visit Churchill late one night, and he was still waffling on whether or not to support Churchill. That's where Aaron entered the king's mind and took control and gave Churchill the support he needed, because Churchill the next day was about ready to acquiesce to all of the people demanding that he enter into negotiating with Hitler. And he was going to make a speech at Parliament the next day, and it turns out the speech he made was, Britain will stand strong, Britain will fight Hitler. And because of that, that the timeline was restored where the Allies ultimately did defeat Hitler and defeat Japan.
So what other time periods would you include in this? If they're going to go back in time again, what other time periods are you going to include in the next book? And where do you see the future of Cyborg? And, of course, you're bringing back my characters, because where would I be without Aaron and Kristen and Eric? Does Eric come into play at all? Is he going to join the team over here and meet the Guardian?
Yes, he does. And, in fact, he is a major player in the book two.
See how I got that?
But in book two, the next candidate that was, the next candidate timeline was one that was very real, and could have very easily resulted in the annihilation of most of the human race. And that timeline had to do with the Cuban Missile Crisis.
That is interesting. But each one of the people that has a cyborg brain has something different that's wrong with them that causes their brain to be placed in a different, in a cyborg body, right? So nobody has the same, he has ALS, but the other one did not. Each one has something else that's wrong with them?
Well, of course, in Eric's case, he was severely injured in an accident.
Yeah.
And that's why he was named a candidate. He was basically mentally he was fine, but physically he was a vegetable after that accident.
Well, who is, with one more question, we have about 10 minutes. Who is Catherine Hodges, and how do you take over somebody's mind during a meeting and make them do what you want them to do? That's so cool. I wish I could do that. Seriously.
Well, essentially that question is answered in book two, but basically what the Guardian instructs is Christian and Aaron and Eric, what he instructs them to do is all they have to do is think about being in the mind of the subject, and they are there. It's just a supernatural thing, and that supernatural thing that happens. And they can sit there and they can listen, or they can actually act and take control if need be.
What would happen if you could actually do that? Just think about all the
that'd be scary.
All the things that are happening in the news, and all of the bills that are signed here, and all of the people that shouldn't be where they are. Well, maybe they should be where they are. I don't know how everybody feels about it. But what would happen if you could actually sit down during a presidential meeting or whatever, General Assembly, or the State of the Union, and all of a sudden the person that's speaking doesn't say what they want to say, they say what you want them to say. What would happen then? That would be really cool.
Yeah, that we'd have some different outcomes, I think. It all depends on who's controlling what they think, I guess.
I often wonder what would really happen if, you know, there are all these reality shows and stuff like that, and they have the winners decide. I don't think they're all on the up and up. Sometimes I really think that they have a decided before, or a person looks a specific way, no matter how talented they are, they're not going to win. I wonder what would happen if they could actually control who's supposed to win or who's really should win, and deal with, and tell if the announcer has the name in front of them, but they don't announce the right name. That would be really cool. Seriously.
Yeah, that would be interesting. And I guess it would depend on who's actually controlling the person and what they wanted.
Well, which characters are you bringing back in the next one so far?
Essentially, everyone that's in book one is in book two, and there's going to be several new characters in book two as well.
Oh, okay. So this is really, like, different. I mean, seriously, what would happen if the president, because I'm adding questions here, people, what would happen if the president of the United States needed to have a cyborg brain because he's got Alzheimer's or he's got cancer, God forbid, you know, brain cancer or something like that? What would happen if the person changes completely into a different person? What would happen then if the president of the United States needed help? That would be interesting.
Of course, the premise of my books is that when the mind is downloaded to the cyborg body, it's still the mind of the person who was downloaded.
Mm-hmm.
So they're not going to change personality-wise. They're not, you know, unless there was something in the mind that somehow affected it. But normally they would be the same person, only in an artificial body.
And it wouldn't be a nicer person either. That's so sad.
But
that's so
the
sad.
Interesting part is if the president mind was downloaded, then could he be subject to working with the guardian?
That's exactly it. And then maybe he would teach him how to be a nicer person. Now, my last new questions is this. There's cyborg brains, but what about cyborg other limbs? What if your brain is fine and you don't need a cyborg brain? What if you need, like, my cousin is a paraplegic. He doesn't have legs. And he lost his legs because there was a drunk person that swiped them. What would happen if you could actually recreate somebody's legs from somebody else's legs so that you can have that? Would that ever come back in the future? Just my wild thing, or arms or elbows or shoulders or something. What would happen if you could do that?
Well, I think in some ways we are actually almost doing that now with mind. You know, you control your limb, your artificial limb, from your mind. Now, it's still very much an artificial limb, but I think as that science evolves, it's going to become more and more human-like for the replacement limb, for the artificial limb, to the point where we may not even be able to tell the difference from a real human limb.
That would be amazing. I know that there's way, like you said, technology can make a person walk, or can we make their arms move better, or whatever. But that is really mind-boggling that could happen. Imagine somebody like my cousin losing, because he's a top oral surgeon. He was the head of oral surgery at Stony Brook. He's very well known.
He is.
He's very well known. And unfortunately, he uses his arms and his shoulders to move. And now he's in rehab because he has to get new shoulders, replacement, but they don't know if they could do it.
Oh, wow.
It's a whole big, he's my genius. We're from the smart side of the family. That's what I keep telling everybody. Yeah, Mark and I are like, forget it. So he's like amazing. So which other historical characters are you going to bring back in the next one? We have about 5 minutes.
Well, again, I'll confess that the Cuban Missile Crisis is certainly at least one of the main opportunities for the timeline to be managed, if you will. It's more managed than it is corrected in that situation. And of course, the characters that come into that are, of course, President Kennedy, Robert F. Kennedy, his assistant and staff, all of the cabinet members of that period in history, head of the CIA in that period of history, the Joint Chiefs of Staff from that time period. And, of course, all of those are in there giving their opinions and what have you, advice to the president. So there's one situation there that's going to be very interesting, having to do with Eric, who is a fighter pilot by trade, if you will, and what he does specifically to keep the actual timeline in place.
That's scary. So are you going to bring Castro into this or no?
You want to bring him what? I'm sorry?
Fidel Castro.
Castro? No, not directly, because Cuban Missile Crisis, Castro was actually kind of a minor player. It was really between the U.S. and the Soviet Union, Khrushchev and Kennedy.
That's interesting. How did you get, I have to ask this question because it wouldn't be me if I didn't, How did you create the title Shepherds of Destiny? I can understand what it means, but for anybody that's listening, how did you create that title? It says it all, by the way.
Well, that was funny. You know, we were my wife and I were sitting on the beach down here one day, and we just sat there going over what should we call this, and I hadn't given it a whole lot of thought before then, and went through several things. You know, we started with The Guardian, and we thought, you know, there's a million books out there called The Guardian, so we wanted something unique, and somehow Shepherds of Destiny came into my mind, and that's what we agreed to call it.
It sort of fits the characters, people. That's all I'll say about that. If you think about it, and you think about what they're doing, and they're thinking about changing the future, it makes sense to me to call it that.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
See that? This is what happens when your mother makes you read 10 books a week, and you have to take notes and have to remember everything. So we know what's next for you. Where can we learn more about you and your work, and when do you think this title's coming out so I could just sort of pencil it in my schedule somewhere?
Yeah, I'm looking for finishing up by the end of this quarter, by the end of March. And, of course, then it's got to go through editing and illustrations. So probably in the second quarter, maybe April, May, before it actually hits the market.
Oh, that's good. Just let me know when. Well, you have my email address, so you let me know when so I can fit you in my schedule again.
I do have a website out there.
Oh, good.
My website's keelbarnacove.com. It's a very small website with a link to the book. It says a little bit about me and my family, and that's about it.
Well, I found it. And if everybody checks out my Facebook wall, the review is there. The picture is there. Everything is there. But I want to thank you so much. This is so interesting. And I can't wait to read the next one. And The Shepherds of Destiny is definitely my 5-star review is on Amazon. I put it on this morning. It's there.
Okay.
Seriously.
Thank you.
It's not under my name because I don't post under my name. I don't want anybody to know it's me in case they don't like what I write. I don't care. No.
I understand.
At least you have 40 degrees. We have 21 and going down.
Oh, heat wave.
Thank you so much, Keel. Everybody have a nice day, and bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right, that was a great interview.